Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to an hour of Mind Power. And I'll tell you, we're going to be talking about something that I, quite frankly, have just a minuscule area of knowledge and experience about. What could that be? Golf. Well, my dad was an avid golfer, absolutely had a passion for it. And I can remember as a kid, and I mentioned this to John Coyne, who is my guest today, because he's written a book called The Caddy Who Won the Masters. And though you, like me, maybe would not be really interested in the game of swinging a stick and hitting this little white thing called a golf ball and making yourself really proud of what you're able to do with that little tiny thing, I'll tell you, John Coyne's book is absolutely fascinating because he has a twist with it that involves the paranormal, and it is wonderful. John Coyne, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Donna. Happy to be here.
Well, John, before we went on air, I mean, you're just such an interesting man. You used to be a caddy yourself, but you have written more than 25 books, both fiction and nonfiction. You yourself are passionate about the game, which is obvious from this book that you've written. What made you turn away from what you called your Stephen King patterning? Give us a little bit more background about you, because you've been involved with writing about the paranormal, or let's look, use the woo-woo word, the occult, for a long time. What made you switch over to golf?
Well, I started writing looking for subject matters that were interesting. And Stephen King had just done Carrie. And I had a background being raised a Catholic and the mythology of the Catholic Church that I thought I could use. And I wrote a book called The Piercing, which was the first novel of that I did. I did about eight of them. And the novels were embodied sort of supernatural, all of those novels, and I sort of ran the course. I ran out of topics. I wrote novels that took place in cities, and one was called Raft. Remember the famous games? Were very popular of chess, like with characters in the supernatural. Mine was called Hobgoblin. And it tied in some Irish mythology into it. So I would always look for something new. And then I never wrote about golf, which I, as a child, I started caddying when I was 10 and walked away from the game around 21 after I finished college. And I decided I would write some golf novels, and I would look at, I started with great golfers that I admired and liked. And when I was growing up, Ben Hogan was the great golfer. So I wrote The Caddy Who Knew Ben Hogan. And then I wrote a novel called The Caddy Who Played with Hickory, which was about the history mainly of golf and from Bobby Jones on into Walter Hagen. And it was focused on Walter Hagen. And then the Masters is probably in April is the first big tournament of the year, and everybody, even if they don't know anything about golf, knows about the Masters. And I started looking around for a plot about the Masters and trying to tell the history of the tournament and also come up with something new. You're always, a writer is always looking for a new twist, a new way to entice the reader. And I came up and said, well, I'll combine my two elements, because a lot of people say that golf is a very scary game. And the idea was to pull back from history, the great golfers of the past, to help an amateur who gets into the tournament every year. There's several amateurs get into the tournament, qualify to play in the tournament. And in this case, it was an amateur whose wife was ill with cancer. Now, there's a backstory about the Masters that was created by Bobby Jones and a guy named Roberts. And Roberts committed suicide on the course when he was in his late 80s. And I thought, you know, what if he could never leave the golf course? What if mm-hmm. his spirit was still there? So I mixed that into it. So I put all these elements into it, and also tried to tell the story of the great history of the Augusta National and the Masters tournament.
Well, that is what so intrigued me. And as I said in the beginning, I have very little knowledge about this. My dad was an avid golfer, was really quite good, I guess, for his time. And I just remember that we would have to sit in the car, because at the time we could drive up to the golf courses, and they had these stretches of area right along the fences. You weren't allowed on the course, but they had
right.
the fence, and
uh-huh.
you could watch the golfers. Well, we have a golf course not too far from where we live that you can watch the golfers from the clubhouse in a certain area of the course. There's a beautiful course here in Washington. We have a few of them. But I was really intrigued with the fact that there is so much information about golf that I didn't even have a clue about. I didn't even know the new technology that has come into golf. But let's go back a little bit, because let's talk about the character Timothy Jack Alexander. Now, he's the primary character. He's a man that is 49 years old by all stretch of the imagination. He's over the hill. Where it's so much fun today when you find that in so many areas, someone that's considered over the hill, that, gee whiz, they couldn't possibly win at anything. Timothy Jack Alexander is someone as a character. When he was younger, he played golf. He was really, really good. But then something happens, and he walks away from this game that he loved because he was champion material. But he walked away from it, and it's because his dad died. You bring out so much human character and human personality. Was Timothy based on anyone that you knew? Was it part of something in yourself? Was it part of something that you related to a golfer that you had known about? Because you obviously did, even though you love the game, you did so much research for this. Who's Timothy?
Timothy, I'll tell you right away, is a better golfer than I am. So let me start there. I walked away from the game myself when I got out of college. I life interfered. I went into the Air Force. I joined the Peace Corps. I lived in Africa. I lived in Spain. And my first passion really was writing. I've always wanted to be a writer, and I finally figured out a way to write a novel that would sell, be commercially saleable. But and I didn't play golf for a long time. You know, you get into the, I live in the New York area, and it's a hectic sort of world, and I making a living and writing and raising a family. And so finally one day I said, I'm going to start playing golf again. And I just went out and I started playing again, not as good as I was when I was 18 and 19 and 20. But, you know, the love of the game, and there's an aspect about, you mentioned earlier about, Don, about the fact that, you know, when you hit a ball and it does what you want it to do, there's a great thrill. And anybody who's played golf knows this. And the funny thing is that you do it once and you think, well, I can do this all the time, well, which is a miracle if you can. But see, I got caught up in that. And then I said, well, here's a whole area that I know a lot about that comes back to me in sort of a nostalgic ways of my childhood. And I pulled that out, and I began to write about the Masters, which of course is a fascinating tournament, and it's full of stories and history, and perhaps is the greatest tournament that we have in America. And very few people know about the history of and how Bobby Jones pulled it together with Roberts and I wanted to tell that story. And to tell that story, if you could use characters, let's call them ghosts, spirits, who come back and who bring their moment of time. And golf changes, and the swing changes, and the clubs change. As you say, there's such new technology about it. I mean, when I grew up in the 50s and 60s, it was, you know, persimmons woods were the great thing. Well, now everybody hits metal woods and utility irons, and we have a we haven't discussed it yet, but we have got a huge controversy going on now with what's called the belly putter, and it's consumed the golfing world because the USGA and the Royal and Ancient, which is the British governing board, are trying to decide whether they're going to allow golfers to use the belly putter. That basically means a long putter that you keep steady by putting the end of it against your stomach. And it's a big argument, and will the game be corrupted like this? You can think about the fact that for a long time, tennis players only hit the ball with one hand, and now they use two hands when the mm-hmm. on the back end. So that's changed that a little bit. So that's the big controversy about golf. I mean, the thing about golf is that everybody thinks it's so boring that doesn't play golf. So, you know, it's good. Yeah, first of all, you have to be quiet all the time when you're around there, and then it's a long time between hitting the ball and then getting there. As Mark Twain, it's a good walk spoiled. But there's a lot to when you're in it. When you're a part of it, you know, you become. It's almost like, let's say this, that it's almost like a cult. You know, you get it. Yes. Wrapped up into it. So.
Yes, very much so. And I think that that's one of the things that your book brings out, because focus and concentration, I don't know of anyone who is successful that doesn't have good focus and good concentration. And whatever it is, and you as a writer had to have that kind of focus and concentration to be able to bring all of these phenomenal variables together. I was intrigued to read about how much planning goes into the golf course. You bring in Tiger Woods and how disciplined he is. Well, I know from reading material about Tiger Woods how phenomenally strong the influence was from his father, and right. how tremendously dedicated this man was. And because of his dad, Tiger Woods was able to take his quote-unquote natural talent and with discipline, focus, and concentration, bring it into a level that I would hope that he'd be able to achieve again, because he's still a young man. But life has its interesting twists and turns, and he got involved in his. But I really found it interesting to find out that the golf course, that the Augusta Golf Course, has an underground heating system that keeps the greens
right.
beautiful. You know, we look at these things and we don't realize what goes into it. Also, the repair vans that follow the players around the country, wherever they might be. There are these companies that have developed these golf clubs. There's such a technology involved here, and that you can tweak golf clubs. And I'm sitting and I'm reading this stuff, and I said, you've got to be kidding. You mean there are these people that can adjust golf clubs so that they have a certain angle to them? I mean, this is just fascinating stuff to me, anyway. I mean,
you're right. I mean, the original golf pro was a craftsman. He would make over the winter with clubs with wooden, you know, with wooden shafts and a steel head and for the members, and sell them to the members in the spring when golf would be when the season would start again. And then they moved. Then they after they figured out a way to do the steel shafts, which was the 30s, and then they switched over to what we'd call a standardized club, which was a two iron to a nine iron plus a one wedge. Now, interestingly, on the wedge, for example, which is what's called the pitching wedge or the sand wedge, it was Walter Hagen that was a great golfer, but had a terrible time getting out of the sand with his any club, and or as they would call it, a bunker. And he was flying with Howard Hughes one time, and he noticed how the flaps worked and on the wing of the plane, and went back into his shop and took a club and created a bigger loft to it and created the first sand wedge. And that wedge made him a successful golfer for the rest of life, and also created what we call the pitching wedge or the sand wedge used out of the sand. Now you've got them at 54 degrees and 64 degrees. They've got various wedges, and you got Phil Mickelson is famous because for what he calls the flop wedge, which was ability to hit a ball really hard and really high up in the air so that it would land soft and hold. So the technology has introduced a lot of new kinds of clubs that are used by pros particularly. And the general term for these now is called a utility wood, but it's actually a metal wood. There's really no wood anymore. They're metal woods, or metal clubs, as they call them, which have replaced what I used to call, or I would call when I was growing up, a driver, a brassy, a spoon. These terms sort of have disappeared with the passage of time. And now we've got a new controversy, as I said, with the long putter, and governing boards of golf will allow that to be continued and to be used by professional and regular amateur golfers, whether you belong to a country club or whether if your dad was coming along, he might want one. I mean, the long putter became popular because with golf, when you putt, and this is really probably more than you need to know, Donna, when you putt, the secret is to have steady feet, and as the older you get, it's a little harder to be steady on your feet. But back in 65, a guy figured out a way to make a long putter that would be, have a base against the stomach, and that he created it, and they started using it, and they allowed it to be used. And now you've gotten kids. I mean, there was a young kid who was 14 years old who won the Asian Pacific Amateur Championship in November, qualified to play in the Masters, being the youngest person ever to be playing in the Masters, and he used a long putter. So it's gone from being a tool, let's say, of the elderly to being used by young players and very successfully. So the game has changed in that way, as it has changed. It's probably changed less than most games, although technology, we've been talking about golf clubs, but you also have the ball, it's become very, very lively, let's say, or electric, and goes farther than it used to go in your dad's time, which is a big difference. It's the same thing that's happened with the baseball, and many of the pros, Jack Nicklaus for one, really think that what we need to do is to curtail the development of the ball so that it won't be so lively. The reason being that these great old courses, like, for example, Augusta, Georgia, Augusta National, they're shrinking because the pros can hit the ball so far. They've taken the challenge out of the tournament. And actually, when Tiger came along and won when he was just 21 years old, Roberts immediately changed and lengthened the golf course, so because the pros were hitting the ball too far. I mean, they're hitting it 330 now off the tee, where in my day a pro like Ben Hogan or Sam Snead or Lloyd Mangrum, well, they were only hitting, if they hit a good drive, it was 280 yards or 285 yards. That was a long drive.
It's when you are reading through the book, The Caddy Who Won the Masters, the evolution information, some of which you have just mentioned, it makes me wonder what would happen if the pros of today used the tools of yesterday.
Yeah, that's
and
good.
The balls
yeah.
of yesterday.
Yeah, right.
Where would they be? Because like any technology, and when you have the more sophisticated technology and you adapt to that, to be able to go back to what the good old boys did or what the old Scots did out on their golf courses is something else. But your stories about the ghosts, I loved it. And I love the insert that you put in about there's a certain mound on the golf course, and this is an Indian mound that was discovered, so they couldn't disturb it. So they had to leave this mound where it was. And I just thought, what a wonderful twist to put in here, because there are, and I quote from your book, the mystical winds that blow. And you can never be sure where your golf ball is going to end up. And there is just so much liveliness. There is this wonderful caddy. And I think when people are not aware of the game, and that's one of the gifts that your book gives, is a perspective of the game that the layperson can integrate with. And, of course, anybody that's into golf or loves the game, they're going to get right into it right away. But Clay is a young man whose dad died in Afghanistan. His dad loved golfing, but he knew the Augusta course, and he had kept a book. And his son read it like a Bible. In fact, it was the Augusta Bible. That's what he called it. And you have this wonderful portrayal of this young man. And here is Timothy, a middle-aged guy, 49 years of age. He's considered the old man. Nobody ever really thinks he's going to do very much of anything because he hasn't really been playing in any of these other tournaments, but he's to any great degree. But he's doing this as like the last hurrah. And here he's got this young caddy that supposedly has no experience. But this kid is wonderful. You mentioned you were 10 years old when you started caddying. Do they let young people caddy anymore, or they've got rules and regulations about that too?
Well, they do let it. I don't think that you probably can start when you're 10 today. But the nice thing about being a caddy, it's a wonderful opportunity for young kids, teenagers, to associate with an adult class and to see how adults operate outside of their own family. The nice thing about golf today on private clubs and particularly in the Midwest and in the East, they allow girls to caddy too, so they have the same opportunity. Yeah, so it's great for them because if nothing else, they pick up the game and that they become fascinated with, because golf is one of these, the younger you are at golf. I mean, I think Tiger was like 3 or 4 before when his father started him with the golf club and cut down golf club to play golf. And the younger you are, the better chance you are you're going to play well for the rest of your life. So you have the opportunity as one to make some money over the summer vacation, two to associate and learn about how adults behave. By observation and be in that world on the edge of it, and three to pick up a game and to learn a game and to learn a great history of golf in terms not only in terms of the United States but in terms of, as you mentioned, Scotland and England and everywhere else. And now it's interesting particularly in terms of women's golf, it is much more popular in Asia The great young pros on the women's tour, the LPGA, are mostly coming out of China and Thailand and Japan, and it's growing dramatically there. Mm-hmm. Much more so than you see in the United States, which maybe women are attracted more to tennis than golf. But
I think it's been typically a boys' club.
And I think that's right.
There was
an old
movie I happened to see with Katharine Hepburn and Spencer Tracy, where she is a golfer, and she's a natural, and she's
very good. She was very good at golfing.
Yes. And in the movie, she was an all-round athlete, so she was encouraged by Tracy to become one of the first women golfers and was just incredible. But I think really in the United States, women and golf really have had an uphill battle. And it has been challenging for a lot of years, but finally it's coming around. But I don't think typically the U.S. mentality is in that orientation. But it's a great way to stay in shape. You're getting a lot of walking, you're twisting, you're moving. It takes focus and concentration, and women can be especially good at that. And the Asian women, it wouldn't surprise me that they would pick up on it, because it's also a great time to socialize. And I noticed at the local golf club here in our own neighborhood, it went public. It had been privately owned. I mean, they used to charge thousands of dollars a year. Well, a lot of people just couldn't afford it. And so someone took over the golf course about a year and a half ago, made it public, and the turnaround has been phenomenal. And boy, on Ladies' Day, you will see women, and I will say this, I just observed a couple of days ago, more Asian women out there playing golf than American women, and it is social time, and they're very serious about it. So it's something I think is great, and they enjoy it because it gets them out of doors, it relieves stress, and just their focus and concentration is so strong. I think that they're a very good example to what women can enjoy, and I've got a good friend who, because she and her husband moved to an area near a golf course, she found herself socializing in a way she had never thought she would. She picked up golf. She said, I don't do it because I'm especially good at it. I'm having fun. I'm going out there, and I'm really having a good time. So it's a wonderful sport. But your book, The Caddy Who Won the Masters, not only do you have information about the world today, as golf is portrayed, but you also have so much of this rich history. You mention Bobby Jones. You have Ben Hogan, you have Jimmy DeMeritt, you have mentioned Brian Nelson, Gene Sarazen, you have all kinds of information about how it is the game of the mind. It's more than just hitting a little white ball with a stick. I can't tell you how many people that are not involved in golf will say, that is the most ridiculous thing to me, I just can't imagine it. And I can totally empathize with both sides. I really can. Because there is so much to it that once you get into it and you realize the disciplines that it takes to work in an environment that has been especially crafted to make it difficult, and if you've got any wind, there's something there. And that aside of the caddy as well, why is a caddy so valuable? Usually they know the course, they know various things, they tell you, use this iron, use that iron, and that's what you bring out in the book. You show the different perspectives of the environment of a man, again, who's over the hill by all accounts, and yet there is a phenomenal love story in this as well with his wife, Carrie. I mean, it's just got so much to it. I just think you're an incredible writer. And even if someone's not a golfer, you don't know anything about TrackMan. Well, neither did I. That's something that makes the golf game supposedly there, and also about progress, and you make a quote in here how progress is a comfortable disease. It ends up making the game, not the challenge it used to be. All of this and history about Eisenhower and so much more, there's just a lot in the story about the caddy who won the Masters. John, you've got so many other wonderful books, too. What is your website where people can go and find out more about what you've done?
Okay, thanks. It's johncoinebooks.com. It'll get one word, you know, johncoyne.com. johncoinebooks.com will do it.
Well, I'll tell you what. If you like the occult, if you are interested in the supernatural and how spirits come back to assist Timothy in this phenomenal challenge that he's taken on in his life, The Caddy Who Won the Masters, whether you know the game of golf or not, you'll find yourself really intrigued. You won't want to put the book down because of all of these characters that come in at different times to bring different points of information to a man that has a journey and a loving wife by the name of Carrie, and much, much more. I think you'll enjoy it. It's a pleasurable but fascinating read. And if you've got anybody on your Christmas list that's into the game,
right,
perfect. This
Thanks.
Is the last thing that they would expect, and you could give it to them and smile and say, tell me about it when you finish reading it.
Right.
John Coyne, thank you so much for being my guest today.
No, it's been my pleasure. Thanks very much, John. Bye now.
John Coyne, and that's spelled COYNE.com. For the guy that's a golfer, anyone you know that you think has got everything, they don't have this book. Get it for him. This is Donna Sebo. Check out johncoyne.com. We're taking a break. We'll be right back.
Are you taking too many oral pain pills and concerned about the side effects? Are you having trouble getting to sleep at night because of the pain? Well, I'm Lou Paradise. I had the same problems you have, cured my pain, eliminated pain pills and their side effects by developing Toprasin, pain relief and healing cream. Toprasin relieves pain without the side effects. It doesn't burn, it doesn't smell, and it doesn't stain. But don't take my word for it. Doctors, pharmacists, and pain specialists are using and recommending Toprasin and ending the suffering for thousands of people just like you. We know you hurt. We want to help. We are so sure that Toprasin will work for you, we offer a money-back guarantee. So if you want the pain relief without the side effects, ask for Toprasin. Toprasin is available at Duane Reade, Quick Check Pharmacies, and Wegmans. Ask for Toprasin or call 1-800-959-1007 for a store near you. That's 1-800-959-1007. Toprasin, the last pain medicine you'll ever need, and you can sleep on that.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. Telephone lines are now open, 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. I always am intrigued with the material that I'll receive from different people, different subject matters. And I know that golf seems a little bit out of my, genre, which it is to a degree because I'm not a golfer. Yet, when you have material come across your path that maybe you've had no association with before, don't turn yourself away from it. Be willing to open yourself up to learning new things about environments that you've never had any association with. You'll be amazed at how significant that can be. I wanted to share a poem with you. We're in the holiday season, and of course, all of us are busy running around, and if you're like me, you've got all kinds of fragrant smells coming out of the kitchen because you're baking and fixing different things. And I'm going to have a recipe for you later today, a holiday special that you might want to just write down, so have that pad of paper and pen handy. But I wanted to share a poem about Christmas. That the sights of Christmas, they're all so jolly, the sparkling lights, the boughs of holly, the pretty presents, the cards, the cheer, Christmas. You grow more wonderful each year. Alyssa Chonecki is the lady that wrote that poem. I think there's so much about the holiday that is so special. And I know there are those individuals that say, oh, you shouldn't even use the term Christmas. Oh, this is terrible. Oh, gee, this, that, the other. This is a holiday that goes back centuries. I was standing in the store and someone was saying, well, I'm Jewish and but we still have the tree. We love the holiday season, so we get into the spirit of the season. I said, that's wonderful, because this is a holiday that has been around for literally thousands of years. Winter solstice is on December 21st, and I guarantee you we're still going to be doing the show after the 21st. But the thing is, we have to understand, this isn't really, even though it has been denoted a Christian holiday, really it isn't. It goes way, 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 way back. Now, true, thousands of years ago, they didn't necessarily have the electric lights and the jolly old Santa who was invented. But the thing is, it's a celebration. It's a celebration of life. And thousands of years ago, when people didn't have the conveniences that we've got, when just to survive to this point of winter was an accomplishment, they wanted something that's going to lift their spirits, so they had a celebration. Christianity adopted this date for that very reason. People enjoyed the holiday so much, they said, why are we going to give up the holiday? We're not going to do it. So the celebration happened. And then there were the other associations that came down through the centuries. So this is a celebration that is oriented to rejoicing over the fact that we are in this period called winter, and that we need to celebrate the joys of life. That is my feeling about it. So I don't care what your faith is. I don't care what anything is with someone. It's the joy of fellowship. It's the joy of getting together, sharing food, sharing stories, sharing with your family, your friends, whatever is going to light up the life and the light around you in what is considered the darkest period of the year. So this is something I think when we can keep that in mind, we won't get caught up with a bunch of other silly nonsense that's going to take away the joy of just enjoying this wonderful, wonderful holiday. And to me, the term isn't so much a big deal as it is the wonder that the holiday brings and the festivity that accompanies it. It's to me, absolutely delightful. Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz if you would like to chat, 888-627-6008. Now, we have an unusual week here. We're going to be talking tomorrow with Martine Enrin-Plau, who we're going to be talking about how to be a take-charge patient. In today's world, we have to become more informed. We have to understand not only what our rights are as patients, but we need to educate ourselves. We need to realize that we have to become an advocate for ourselves on so many levels. And Martine has just done an absolutely wonderful job. So we'll be talking about that tomorrow. On Wednesday, I am going to be on a business trip, so we are going to do a retreat of Hildegard of Bingen. If you missed that wonderful interview last week, then don't miss it this week. So we'll be doing a replay of that. Taking Back Your Time with Sherry McGuire, who is going to be my guest. Holidays, well, they can wreak havoc on you. You can end up saying, I'm hating every moment of this. I can't wait till it's over, because you've overstressed yourself. And we really have to take personal responsibility for that. So Sherry has some wonderful tips. Now, we were supposed to have Bob Coran, but Bob Coran ended up experiencing a horrific happening. And there was a bomb that went off someplace where he's over in Ireland, and he was visiting a country, and this experience was just unbelievable. I got an email from him last week, and he said, Don, I'm not going to be able to make it on Friday. So we may have a surprise guest on Friday. We also may have a surprise guest on Monday. Don't ask me who it is, because I don't even know yet. So you'll have to stay tuned to find out. Anyway, the guest listings are up on my website as well as on BBS, and you can check that out at any time. As I was mentioning, the holidays, well, they can also be very expensive, and we may end up having regrets that we've gone overboard. It's so easy to get caught up in the frenzy of buying things. So I think there are some tips that we can keep in mind. The holiday really is about, as far as I'm concerned, the joy of life and the gift of life. To me, that's what the holiday represents. And I absolutely love walking around the neighborhoods, checking out who's done what and what their creativity is involved. The twinkling snowmen or the luminescent candy canes, whatever it might be, and Santa's up on a roof. I just love what people put together. It's so much fun. I did when I was a kid, and I still love it today. But one of the things that is, well, something we all have to fight with, and that's impulse buying. If you're like me, oh, you see this there and that the other, and you go, oh, my goodness, I really, really think I should get this. It's such a bargain. It's such a deal. But, you know, maybe you want to back off. So here is a suggestion that was brought to my attention. There's a website called ImpulseSave.com. Every time you think you've heard of everything, well, here's something new, ImpulseSave.com. By restraining yourself, you can take the cash you would perhaps spend for that item that maybe you really don't need or really don't want, but, gee, it's glitter or whatever is attracting you. Maybe it's some software, and you just go gaga. Oh, what's $200 here, $300? Wow, this is a Christmas present for myself. Think about it. Is it something you absolutely need? Well, you can have this savings account, and it can be like a holiday budget or New Year's Eve party, or maybe your super-duper trip to Europe or Australia or Africa or someplace in the U.S., wherever you wanted to go. But you never seem to have the money to do it? Well, at ImpulseSave.com, you can save because you can directly deposit the money that maybe you would spend on this item to your goal fund, whatever its label might be, and you have saved for your special account, whatever. So you really have to back off and think. Also, a lot of people need to check your bank balance account and also check your credit card balance account and check your debit value. You need to know what exactly you've got before you start going shopping in the mall. A tip that has often been suggested is put your checkbooks aside, your credit cards, leave them at home. Do not take them with you. Shop with your eyes. Enjoy the opportunity. But remember, many times, with some of these sales that go on, you cannot return the item. If you are given an opportunity in some locales to return the item, you don't get the cash back. You're then forced to go and spend it on something else. So it's wise. Where do you want your money to go? Checking money in your account reduces impulse buying and, well, making sure that whatever you buy, you stick to your holiday gift list. I know a number of people who said their families have gotten so large. They have their nieces and nephews and grandkids and, you know, moms and dads and uncles and aunts. And they just said, sorry, I just am not in that area with budget. So maybe they do something with food or they plan on a get-together or they gift in another way where they're not going to be so strapped. And sometimes they just say, hey, we don't need to do this anymore. That's not a requirement. Let's just get together and have a good time. And also, something that is unique and unusual from where you are as a gift, you can maybe give that gift of a video or something of this nature to someone. There are ways that you can gift people. It doesn't have to cost you a whole bunch of money. And you know what? All you have to do is make it all right. If you're like me, you can always find something to buy. But actually say, what do I have already that I can work with? What can we utilize? A good way to save money is to check out your thrift stores in your local area. And if you love to be creative, sometimes you can take something that is somebody else's junk that they gave away that for you, with a little imagination, a few clips with a scissor, glue, sequins, glitter, whatever you might do, you might have something so creatively unique that other people will think you'd spent a whole bunch of money putting it together. But it's your imagination and your creativity that has made something unique and special, whether it's decorating for your home or giving something special to someone else. And kids love to employ their imaginations, too. So it's a good thing to do. Again, my adage is with the holidays, it's spending the time with the loved ones, utilizing what you've got, being grateful for what you have, and just having the fellowship with other people is very, very important. Donna Siebel here. Give me a buzz at 888-627-6008. Now, I am going to be sharing a recipe with you. And when we come back, the recipe is quite an interesting one. It's something that when I came across, I said, I've heard of fruitcakes, but a jeweled gingerbread fruitcake? Fascinating. I think you will find it a tasty dish that will be different from anything that anybody else has served previously. So when they come back, I'll share that recipe with you. Donna Siebel here. Give me a buzz again if you'd like to chat. All I need is your first name or initial. And, of course, I like to know where you're calling in from. 888-627-6008. We'll be right back.
Have you ever had a friend tell you about a product they really believed in? Hi, this is Donna Siebel. Toprosin is a homeopathic cream that is just fabulous. I use it and my friends use it for relief of painful discomfort such as aching muscles and sore feet. Odorless, non-greasy, it is a product that belongs in everyone's medicine cabinet and first aid kit. Check out www.toprosin.com. That's T-O-P-R-I-C-I-N, and find out more information. You can order Topperson online or call 800-959-1007. That's 800-959-1007. Be sure to give them the code DS30, and you'll receive a 30% discount. Topperson, non-toxic, safe for children, too. This is a product that really works. Try it. I think you'll like it.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna. Okay, have you got that pad of paper and pen handy? This is called a jeweled gingerbread fruit cake. And this, believe it or not, is something that you can douse in whiskey. That's going to give it a flavor. And then it's wrapped in marzipan and fondant. Yes, it is decadent. And the whiskey flavor, if you didn't want to use that, then you don't have to use the whiskey. But let me share with you all of the ingredients. You're going to need 2 cups of all-purpose flour, 1/2 cup of almond flour, that's almond meal. You can grind your own in your fruit processor if you want. 2 teaspoons of ground ginger, 2 teaspoons of dried ground ginger, 1 teaspoon of ground cinnamon, 1/2 teaspoon of freshly grated nutmeg. And trust me, the freshly grated is going to give a flavor that the dried package isn't going to have. I love freshly grated nutmeg. You need 1/2 teaspoon of ground cloves, 1/2 teaspoon of ground cloves, 1/2 teaspoon of salt. So that's 2 teaspoons ginger, 1 teaspoon cinnamon, 1/2 teaspoon of freshly grated nutmeg, 1/2 teaspoon ground cloves, 1/2 teaspoon of salt. You're going to need 3 cups of dark raisins and 1 cup of golden raisins, 1 cup of dried cranberries, 1 cup lightly packed dried pitted apricots, and you want to chop the apricots, not big chunks, literal chunks, 1 cup of lightly packed dried pitted dates, chopped, and you can get that already chopped for you at the store, 1/2 cup of lightly packed pitted prunes, chopped. Those you can also get, pre-cut. 1/2 cup of whiskey or dark rum, plus up to 1 cup more for soaking. Rum I prefer over the whiskey, but you could use either one. And 1/4 cup each of chopped candied orange and lemon peels. 1/4 cup each of chopped candied orange and lemon peels. You need 1 cup of unsalted butter at room temperature. 1 1/4 cups packed dark brown sugar, 5 eggs, 1/4 cup of apricot preserves, and you need the freshly grated zest of 1 orange and 1 lemon. I know it's a lot of ingredients, but that's all right. Now, the garnish on this is going to be 1/3 cup of apricot preserves, and you should have a piece of cheesecloth because you're going to want to strain them. You want to get as much water out as possible. Some confectionery sugar. You're going to need 9 to 10 ounces of marzipan. You're going to need some cornstarch and 1.5 pounds of white fondant. And if you want any little silver ball decorations or whatever, you can have those as optional. Now, your oven for your fruitcake is going to be heated to 350 degrees. You need a 9x3 spring form pan. You want to line the bottom of the pan with parchment paper. You want to butter the paper, flour the bottom and the side of the pan. And if you want to make it quick, just use your nonstick cooking spray. It's just as good. Then you're going to take your first 7 ingredients. You want to put them together. Your raisins, cranberries, apricots, dates, prunes, 1/2 cup of whiskey or rum, and candied peels. You want to put those in a big bowl. And you want to just
mix them up quickly, take you just a second, and just let them sit. Then on medium-high speed, you want to beat your butter until it's wonderfully smooth and creamy. You add your brown sugar, beat it until the mixture of brown sugar and butter is fluffy. Add your eggs one at a time. Then you want to mix in your preserves and your lemon as well as your orange zest. And then on medium-low, on the mixer, it's doing the work for you, you gradually add your flour mixture, and then you're going to also slowly add your dried fruit mixture that has been marinating in the rum or whiskey, whichever you prefer, until it's all mixed very well. Now, you're going to put the batter in the pan. You want to wrap your pan with a parchment collar that's about 3 inches above the pan. Secure it with kitchen twine. Put your pan on a baking sheet. You're going to bake this at 300 for about 2 hours and 50 minutes because this is very, very dense batter. So it takes that long, almost 3 hours to bake it. You want to make sure you test it before you bring it out, putting a bamboo skewer in it to make sure it comes out clean in the center of the fruit cake. Now, you're going to let it cool in the pan for 30 minutes, and then you want to put it on a rack. You let it cool thoroughly. Now, you're going to take and brush a quarter of a cup of rum or whiskey over the cake. Then you want to wrap it in plastic wrap. You want to store this cake for about a week to 3 weeks in an airtight container. And you want to douse it with about a quarter of a cup of whiskey or rum at least once a week. Now, the reason this is going to be so good is that the rum and or the whiskey, whichever flavor you prefer, is going to just saturate the cake. Sometimes people soak cheesecloth in the liquid and then wrap their cakes with it. So however you do it, you just need to know it needs to be done once a week, so you need to mark it on your calendar so you don't miss it. And you're going to then garnish when you're ready to serve the cake, when you want to have it for the holiday. And, of course, little slivers go a long way. You want to put your cake on your parchment-lined baking sheet, and you want to take the preserves, the apricot preserves that you have drained, you want to brush them over the cake, and then you want to take a work surface, and you want to put confectionery sugar on it. Roll your marzipan to 1/16 of an inch thickness and cut out a 14-inch diameter round. And you want to carefully roll the marzipan over your rolling pin, and you want to unroll it on top of the cake, smoothing it over the top and the side to avoid any air bubbles or bumps. And then you want to trim it all around so it's just so beautifully covered all over. And then you want to take a clean surface, dust it with cornstarch, and roll the fondant to a quarter of an inch thickness and cut out another 14-inch diameter round. And take your fondant from underneath with both your hands, place it over the cake, smoothing the top and the side, trimming the excess from the cake bottom. And you can, with your remaining fondant, cut out snowflakes or whatever else that you want to do, dampen them with water and apply to the cake, and then press on whatever other decorations you want. And you can serve it at that time, or you can store it, wrapping it in plastic wrap, refrigerate it, and this cake will keep beautifully, after you put the fondant on it even, for up to 3 weeks. It'll be unlike anything you've ever served before. Just an incredible, incredible recipe. And if you're like me, and I have a favorite fruitcake recipe, I have my jeweled fruitcake recipe I've fixed for I don't know how many years, and it's a big hit. This one will just absolutely blow people's mind. Yes, it is going to be some work, but you do it once, and if you have a large party even, it will be enjoyed by everyone. And if you don't want the fondant, then just leave the marzipan, however you want to do it. But whatever you do, just know that you can fix this in advance, and it will keep wonderfully in the rum or whiskey flavor in with that is just going to add a special magic to it. It's just really absolutely delicious. Well, this is Donna Sebo. I know that we're out of time. Don't forget tomorrow, we're going to be talking about how you can be a take-charge patient. Personal responsibility is very, very important. And as we become knowledgeable and know how to take care of things and do what we need to do for ourselves, it makes all the difference in the world. It allows us to be our own advocate, but also it assists people that are going to be an advocate with us, a loved one, to be more informed. And it's terrific. So join me tomorrow. Tell your friends. And remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. This is Donna Siebel. Have a magnificent day or evening wherever you might be. And remember, you're behind your life. This is your script. Write it out any way that you want. But no, you may have to work to get what you want. And that's okay, too. That's part of the adventure of life. Donna Siebel here. God bless. Have a wonderful day or evening wherever you might be. I'll talk with you manana. Bye-bye.
You have been listening to The Donna Siebel Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Siebel Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.